Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, the Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Elaine B. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Today's date is Monday, July 2nd, 2018. Today we're reading from the Big Book and we're in the chapter Into Action on page 80. We are reading the last paragraph, beginning with the chances are that we have, and we're reading through four paragraphs, ending with rather than risk a face-to-face combat. Today's readers are Leslie M. for the 12 Steps, Melissa C.K. for the 12 Traditions, Ginger C., Kathy Jo P., and Kathleen O., and our newcomer greeter is Melanie C. The reference number for the 10 a.m., for the 8:30 a.m. meeting yesterday, our special edition for Sunday, July 1st, 2018, is 11605. That's 11,605. And the reference number for this morning's 7 a.m. meeting for July 2nd, 2018, 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, is 11606. That's 11,606. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states that each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Leslie M. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Elaine B. Thank you for your service. I'm Leslie M., a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. The 12 steps. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to do service, and I pass.
Thank you, Leslie M. I will now ask Melissa C.K. to please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Melissa C.K. I'm a grateful recovering compulsive overeater in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for this opportunity to do service. I pass.
And thank you very much, Melissa K. How our meeting works, CK, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing and that you keep your share to about 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 80. And we're reading the last paragraph, beginning with the chances are. We're going to read through 4 paragraphs and comment on them all. And I will ask Ginger C. to please get us started.
Thank you, Elaine, and thanks for your service. This is Ginger C., recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. So the chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with a girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may be understanding, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure that our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take. Our design for living is not a one-way street. It is as good for the wife as for the husband. If we can forget, so can she. It is better, however, that one does not needlessly name a person upon whom she can vent jealousy. Perhaps there are some cases where the utmost frankness is demanded. No outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. It may be that both will decide that the way of good sense and loving kindness is to let bygones be bygones. Each might pray about it, having the other one's happiness uppermost in mind. Keep it always in sight. that we are dealing with that most terrible human emotion, jealousy. Good generalship may decide that the problem be attacked on the flank rather than risk a face-to-face combat. And this is a hard part of the book, you know, especially if you're honest and looking at your life and maybe what you've done. And it's interesting this morning, the line got very silent, you know. But again, my depth in white, my experience, strength, and hope, you know, I don't regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it because it can help somebody. So I'm going to share my truth with you this morning. And, you know, a man involved, well, it was a woman involved that often feels very remorseful at times because she's married to such a loyal and wonderful husband. And that was me. And I didn't have a full affair, but I definitely had a friendship with a gentleman that was not healthy. And I was seeking a vicarious thrill that Harlan loves to talk about with those four impediments. And then I started to even get sicker because I got silent and we're as sick as our secrets. That's the second part to those impediments, a secret that I will not tell. So this directions, though, are so vital because the last thing we want to do is to create any more harm than we've already done. So we have to really be in this book and knowing the directions because this tells me very clearly, if they do not know, do we tell them? Not always, we think. But because I'm so selfish and so self-centered, and because I was so with a guilty conscience, I knew I was doing wrong with this other person, and I knew I was hurting the person that I love the most, my husband. So what did I do? I went and told him. He had not a clue. This book tells me right there, not always we think, and there's a reason for it, because it brings up jealousy, tremendous jealousy. And to my surprise, because of telling my husband the truth to set me free, because it's all about Ginger in the end of the day, we have to be so careful how we're going through this thing called life. Are my motives clear? Am I doing this in a selfless way? Or am I thinking again about Ginger and how I'm going to feel better? And he called this person up and he wanted to meet him, to talk to him. We don't want to risk a face-to-face combat. And this is what can happen if we don't follow this work precisely. So again, thank God we have directions and thank God we have a sponsor who knows this work to teach us this. Because it's better to do this on the flank. I still need to accept and I need to take ownership of my part because that's how I change. If I don't own it, guess what? I'm going to repeat it. But I get to do this work on the flank. I get to be creative about my amends. I don't have to involve those that don't need to be involved to potentially create more harm. So again, I'm so grateful that I have the honesty, the openness, and the willingness to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol because that secret was killing me. And I needed to get clear because what I lack today as an addict is power. And when I'm secret, I don't get that connection. I'm in fear, and I can't feel God, and I don't stay safe and protected. But the last thing I just want to end on, and I do this with a lot of sponsees with their marriages and their relationships, again, this is no longer your show. You've taken enough. It's time to give back. Generosity. And with your partners, we get to have their happiness uppermost in mind. Instead of me walking through the door and waiting for my husband to say, hi, honey, how was your day at work? Why don't you go to him? Hi, sweetheart. What did you do today? How did your business go? Their happiness uppermost in your mind. And it's amazing how life takes on a new meaning when I can practice this a day at a time. And with that, I pass.
Thank you very much, Ginger C. Some powerful paragraphs here. Who'd like to comment on them?
Joanne W.
Joanne W.
Julie E.B.
Julie E.B.
Kathleen O.
Kathleen O. Kathleen O.
I don't normally do this, but I have some thoughts I'd really like to share, so I'm going to put my name on the list. Anyone else?
Richard B.
Richard B. Okay, let's get started with that. Joanne W., Julie E. B., Kathleen O., Elaine B., and Richard B. Go ahead, Joanne W. You'll be followed by Julie.
Hey, thank you. Hi, my name is Joanne W. I'm recovering compulsive overeater in Pennsylvania. Everything that everybody shared, I mean, at the 7 o'clock meeting and this meeting, just being about relationships and about I was the unfaithful one in my marriage, and that it was from with an old boyfriend that was more like a friend. I wanted to be a friend with him, and that finding myself wanting to talk to him more than I wanted to talk to my husband and talk about abusive situations, which was part of everything. And that that I did tell, my husband did know what was going on, and through therapy, and my therapist was able to tell my husband of how I was feeling and being truthful, that felt like I was invisible to him, and that that I wasn't feeling like I was important enough to him, and so many other reasons, and that gave us a chance to open his eyes, and I made an amends that I was sorry, and that but it gave us a chance to talk it out through therapy, and that relationships, and I still struggle with them. I'm not very good at them. I shouldn't say very good at them, but I mean, it's a struggle that I still do. But now I'm able to talk a little more heart-to-heart with my husband, and thank you. And that's all I have to say. I pass. And thank you.
Thank you, Joanne W. Julie E.B., you're up next, followed by Kathleen O.
Yeah, hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered, one day at a time in Colorado. And boy, lonely and felt sorry for myself. You know, I think it's easy sometimes to read these and think through the various ways that we have harmed our partner. But this is the root of it for me. The root of it is selfishness, self-centeredness, as it says in the book. And feeling sorry for myself is the beginning of so much brokenness that I create in my intimate relationships. And feeling lonely, there's a lot of noise on the line, feeling lonely is another source that gets me going. And as it turns out, it was never that other person's job to fill that lonely hole, to fill my pity hole, which Bill W. calls quicksand. Self-pity is the beginning of the end for me, because it just takes me out of caring about the other person. You know, the opposite of self-centered is thinking of other people's needs and looking out for them. And the opposite of self-seeking is altruism, giving with no expectation of return. Well, I learned from romance novels and television and all sorts of things, the relationships in my life that I grew up with, that relationships are about what you can take from them. And this is trying to put us on a different footing, where we say, where were we feeling lonely, sorry for ourselves, and so we did things that hurt the other person, and we created patterns. Here's what changes. Now my higher power is in charge of my care, the provision of everything I need from day to day. And so my higher power fills that loneliness. My higher power does have compassion, not pity, compassion when I face difficult circumstances. So I don't need to burden my life partner with that. I can instead have that filled by God and have something to offer in the relationship and be of service and be useful. Thanks for letting me share. And I pass.
Thank you, Julie E.B. Kathleen O., you're up next. And if you're not Kathleen O., please mute the line. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Elaine. This is Kathleen O., recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. And oh my goodness, the big book has saved the difficult issues for the end of step nine, which is probably a good thing. So it's telling us we likely have domestic troubles. And, you know, how do we make amends for affairs? We're being told not to go into detail if our spouse suspects infidelity. And we don't tell our spouse at all if the person does not know about our infidelity. And this isn't, you know, I love what Ginger said, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. I have to remember that a lot when I'm working these steps. And, you know, this is an area that I also needed to remember that I had decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience and to ask to be given the strength and direction to do the right thing, and that we must not shrink at anything. And if there is a time to shrink, this area is a tempting one to do it. So I've cheated, and I've been cheated on. And I include flirting and giving other men attention, you know, other men other than my spouse attention in that category of cheating. And what I've learned is I had no right to pursue any kind of flirting or giving attention to any guy who feels lonely or sorry for himself because he isn't happy in his marriage. And there's always two sides to every story. And if two people have made a commitment to be together or be married, they really are off limits. So no matter how much the ego can justify one's actions, the reality is that third person is always going to be hurt. And denial, you know, don't even know I'm lying, I could start off saying, well, I'm just being a kind friend, a listening ear. But I tell you, that denial can snowball really quickly. And, you know, what right do I have to inflict that kind of hurt on someone? So being a person who has been cheated on, I lost trust. And losing trust in someone you have a commitment with is very painful. And the thing I needed to look at, and being the person who has also cheated, you know, for me to cause someone else to lose trust or cause them pain, that's just wrong. And you know, there is no justifying that. I used to try to justify it, but the bottom line is it's wrong. And there's horrible pain involved, not only to the spouse, but to the family. So the people I had harmed when cheating, I made amends to, as I didn't have the luxury of them not knowing. They knew. And it all turned out well, and thank you, God. You know, we are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. So the thing is, if I follow the principles of this program and stay connected with my higher power, this behavior is not going to be repeated. You know, page 69, in this way we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal, asking God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. That was really important for me in this step. A therapist told me that the way to live up to these ideals is for couples to have the ideals and never be alone with a person of the opposite sex. I mean, that's pretty easy. You know, what's going to happen? just a reminder, I have gone on, so I won't finish what I was going to say, but I'll save it for another time. Thanks, Elaine.
Oh, thank you, Kathleen. Oh, great share. Richard B., I'm going to share, and then you'll be right up after me. I do have some things. I don't normally do this, but I really would like to share, because the second paragraph that we read, the first paragraph on page 81 that starts with whatever the situation, I've been taught that there's a good formula in here that I can follow. You know, when I first did my amends, my sponsor had me talk to three different people for each amends that I needed to face-to-face somebody with, so that I had a really good, clear idea. But as we continue, you know, these ninth-step amends don't stop. So in this paragraph, it says, undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. That's number one. I want to go and admit my fault. A little further down, it says, we're sorry for what we have done. That's number two. I want to express my regret for what I've done and the impact it's had on them. And number three, God willing, it shall not be repeated. You know, with God's help, I'm going to try to behave differently. They're going to be more interested in a demonstration than my face-to-face apology, my face-to-face amends. I need to live differently. And, you know, my time with them is not a 20-question time. It's not about me explaining and defending myself or trying to be understood. It makes me think of the prayer in the 12 and 12 that says we seek to understand more than being understood. And the other thing is if they don't know, should we tell them? This doesn't just apply if I've been, you know, having a relationship outside of a marriage. This applies if I've been gossiping about you. It may cause you harm if I go and tell you I've been gossiping about you, but I do need to go to the people I gossiped about you with. I had to break down some dynamics in relationships, particularly in family, where our modus operandi was to talk about the others. And I had to stop doing that and make amends for doing that. And the other thing is that, you know, when I first read these steps on the wall, it was years later before I got to step 9. And thank God, because at first I had a couple people I was curious about and I wanted to go back and hunt them down. And yet I was a married woman. And by the time I did, I realized that it would have caused me harm. Yet one, I continued to feel guilt, shame, and remorse. And it kept coming up. And I kept going to more people until I got the answer. You know, we both consulted to what happened that day. And I felt guilty about it. I felt shame about it. And yet when this person pointed out that that person had a choice, and I didn't force anything, and yet, you know, that I could let go of my guilt and my shame without going and causing havoc in his family and his marriage, you know, many, many, many years later. So I'm going to pass with that and invite Richard B. to come on the line and share your insights on this step, on this reading.
Thank you. This is Richard B. in sunny Ireland. And thank you for the reading and for everybody who shared and for giving service. This section of the big book is wonderful because it stops me from harming other people. There was an incident years ago where I was unfaithful to my wife and I was going into a treatment center and I hadn't worked the steps and I told her about it beforehand and it was the wrong thing to do. But higher power was looking out for me because my wife already knew. So that was okay, the outcome. But I would never do that again, you know, make an amends to somebody in this situation this way. It happened a few years again afterwards, and it was while I was still in relapse. And the big book was very clear that I do not tell my wife when she doesn't know and when I'm certain she doesn't know. And this happened with another man. And the guilt was absolute immense. And I had I was in and out of relapse at the time, and I was actually out of it, and it caused me to go back into relapse. And the guilt was just so painful. But the way I worked out of that was to not tell her and to admit my wrongs to myself and to my sponsor and to use my higher power. You know, I meditated through it, I prayed through it, and that was how the guilt came away from me. You know, if it didn't come away, then I could have done something else, like, you know, made some sort of other amends to some, you know, to some charity or some other situation, or help somebody else in a similar situation. But I am grateful now that, you know, if I see myself going towards the temptation, I know I have to crank up my program and I have to increase my contact with my higher power. And I have to realize at the same time that I cannot harm another person, including myself. And it hurt me so much. So, yeah, it's something that I pray that my higher power would guide me, and I would never go to that situation again. With that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Richard B. from sunny Ireland. Woohoo! So today we are in the chapter Into Action. We are on page 80. We read the last paragraph, which begins with the chances are that we have. We read through four paragraphs, ending with rather than risk of face-to-face combat. We're commenting on all four paragraphs, and who would like to comment? Star one to unmute.
Liat TD.
Liat TD.
Sherry KB.
Sherry KB. Anybody else? Why don't we go ahead with Liat TD and Sherry KB, and then we'll come back on the line for more. Please be thinking about these instructions and how what you might like to share. Thanks so much. But also, please pay close attention to Liat TD and then KB. Please go ahead, Liat.
Yes, thank you so much, and thank you for all the people this morning on the line. I'm walking and a little scattered head, so I hope I'll so just thinking about all the honesty that I heard this morning, because it's a very delicate subject, you know, and very revealing and vulnerable. So I'm thankful for all the people that were vulnerable and honest this morning. Sexual interaction and relationship with men for me has always been an issue. I was very promiscuous as a young woman, and I came from a neglect. So for me, you know, intimate relationship was not intimate, really, sexual relationship was a way to fill a void in me. And for me, it's like just like food; it was just a drug. You know, someone pays attention to me, and I get high. And it took many, many, many years in the program. I'm so thankful for this year, you know, and a vision for you, you know, the beautiful woman that took me through the steps that, you know, told me you need to make a face-to-face amend to your husband, you know, 22 years. I didn't cheat on him ever, but it's, you know, that fantasizing, beautifying myself to other men, getting attention and all that is, you know, now I didn't, I mean, there was, you know, I didn't tell him, you know, the amend was beyond. I harmed him in so many ways. But I made amends for other things. But just a while ago, I realized that I need to treat, you know, it says that the way we live our lives, you know, and I need to treat this issue just as I do with food. There has to be entire abstinence. And so a few years ago, I decided entire abstinence from fantasizing, you know, doing anything outside of, you know, beautifying myself to other men, getting attention, talking, and focusing on him and magnifying the good on him. And it changed my marriage, you know, it became just like, you know, my food, I love today. I don't eat sugar, flour, and anything that got me high. And I love my food. It's beautiful. It's nourishing. And it's the same thing with my marriage, you know, having an entire abstinent mindset and having him, building him up and having him be my, you know, my everything when it comes to relationship, you know, made my marriage the most exciting. I'm in love with my husband after all these years, you know, and many things happened as a result also, so I'm not going to go into it, but I just wanted to share the entire abstinence idea that I, you know, as a way of amending my marriage. I love you all. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Leati D. Sherry KB, you're up next, and then we'll take some more shares.
Good morning, Elaine. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. I'm very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for your service, Elaine, and everybody on the line. And, you know, I just want to say that when I first did this, well, I remember reading it years ago, and I thought I couldn't identify in, and I made myself more of the martyr about these pages than you know, taking responsibility. Fast forward, doing the book this way, I realized that I had, you know, I'm going to kind of come from a different angle here. I had an affair with the food. It's what I was doing. It was like the food was my lover. And so how could I have a relationship with my husband when I was having an affair with the food? Also, when I realized that when somebody had mentioned earlier about the self-pity thing angle, and, you know, don't you know, I flirted with men by getting talking to them about my problems, my domestic problems, and didn't realize that that was, you know, just as bad. And, you know, realized that after doing the work this way that I was just as responsible for doing this kind of behavior and didn't want to admit to it, cop up to it. And because I remember flirting to get my way with things, with men, things that I wanted, or even if it was getting the right work done on my car. I used to flirt with guys to get what I wanted. And so I had to really look back at my behavior on that, because this is all about identifying in. So I had to find the place where I could identify in with this stuff. And you know, having the uttermost happiness in mind, you know, I heard earlier on the meeting somebody saying the way, you know, the way to have a good relationship is to have a good relationship with God, so that I can have a good relationship with my husband. And then also about, you know, the way I treated my food was the way I treated my relationship with my husband, which that's going to keep me thinking for quite a while on that one, the way I used it. But that thought about, you know, having an affair with the food, which I already knew about, really makes me think about a lot of things and how I went about it. Instead of playing the martyr because of being married to an addict myself, I could sit there and go all day about him, but the focus is on me. And so with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sherry KB. Thank you, everybody, for your honest and thoughtful shares. Who else would like to comment on this reading? Page 80, the last paragraph through the next four paragraphs, ending with face-to-face combat.
Melanie C.?
Melanie C.
I'm Rachel O.
Rachel O. And I think we have time for maybe one or two more. Okay. These are tender paragraphs, so we'll go ahead with Melanie C., Rachel O., and then we'll see if there's anybody else who wants to finish up for us, okay? Unless there's somebody now, would that leave their name? Okay. Melanie,
Marilyn
T. Marilyn T. Okay. Melanie, please go ahead, and then you'll be followed
Wendy
by...
Wendy.
Oh, Wendy. Wendy, if there's time for you, too.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Please go ahead, Melanie.
Thanks so much, Elaine. Good morning, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm from Oregon and recovered. So grateful for that. Yeah, these are very specific directions, and so I'm looking at ways in which I can focus right in and pull apart what it is they're telling me specifically to what they're saying. And so I can't. But I can certainly tell you that I had many, many ways that I was unfaithful in my marriage, and how I withheld affection and intimacy from my husband in particular, where the bulk of my work still continues today for amends making, because I've been with him 29 years. And before then, I had been in disease, you know, however many years. And that I drove into the ground, and every piece that we talk about in the big book was my label. I'm selfish and self-centered. I'm easily hurt. I'm easily offended. And so I had to go out about the business and making sure that I had some sort of excitement in my life to be able to cover over that. And so those unfaithful ways were with whatever I could find titillating and exciting and exhilarating. And I didn't find them to be offensive. They just were things that I could do in order to keep myself going with what I needed to do to get my day done. I never considered what happened, never considered how it hardened my heart. I never considered how I had pushed my husband to the background. You could call him a handyman at that particular point in our marriage, where it had come from with the beautiful courtship that we had when we first got together. And the story is so divine even to this day, to where it ended up as my disease continued to progress. Some of those examples were definitely, I stopped confiding in him about things. I stopped sharing exciting moments with him. I took those to other people outside of my relationships. I took it to friendships. I took it to my sister. I took it to my mother. Never any with him. Boom, the door was shut there with that sort of thing. I had ideas about how our life should run, how our family should go, and how I wanted him to do things. And so I would share those things in a unattractive, hurtful way. Boom, another door was shut, intimacy blocked. I got buried under and under and under and only thought about how it was hurting me. It wasn't until the step work came along that I saw what I had stripped from another human being. And I will forever, to the day I lay in a grave, be making amends for that. Because these kinds of things do restore, but they don't restore easily. The ego comes up quickly, and my husband sometimes is suspicious, you know, of the motive behind. It's getting better, and I see the miracles happening every single day. And is it worth it? You betcha. And my heart and my soul is entrenched in pressing into God, because I must have that thing that I stole from him. How do I describe this? Given back to him. God has shown me deep in my heart what I've stolen from another human being. And when that happens and it comes from me, then it's trickled out for the rest of the world. I can see other things in this way, and my life is just getting richer and bolder and bigger and braver, starting right here in my home. And if I have just another second, Elaine, I'd like to simply say what I read in Paul O's book, and I'll kind of paraphrase it here. He says, you know, of course we go out and do the 12 steps and we sponsor, and that's what we need to do, and we do that straight up after step 12. But what he would think would be the right thing to do based on his relationship with Max was to turn that around and do that kind of service in his home first, to restore those relationships first, and then go out and give the message to another alcoholic. I'm not endorsing that, nor is he. We're just mentioning that. Thanks, Elaine, for the extra second. Pass.
Oh, thank you, Melanie C. That was a great add to your share. Important information. Rachel O., you're up next, followed by Marilyn T. And if everybody keeps their comments just over 2 minutes, we'll have time for Wendy M. as well. Please go ahead.
Hi, I'm Rachel O., recovered bulimic food addict in St. Croix in the Virgin Islands. And my orientation to these passages is as was first, anyway, when I first read these, as that other understanding woman, as the girl who understands in the exciting affair. And in my own life, I had in past relationships I had been in, I'd held myself to a particular standard. But this affair that I was involved in got me very, very sick. And I speak from experience that involving another person, what really haunted me after that, and what I really desperately, desperately wanted to make amends for, was the fact that she knew who I was, that he had told her, and he had done so with on some level an emotional motivation that stemmed from resentment and wanting her to see, you know, how much pain he was in or whatever. But working the steps, even before I got to the steps, I just recognized that was wrong, and I didn't know how to make it right. And it's one of those things that just got me really, really sick. And I, in my own marriage today in recovery, I make an effort to make sure that I am honest. I echo some of the shares before, honest about the things that make for an intimate relationship, and that I focus on being of service in my home, being generous, not being critical. At the end of the day, I realized that I was really no different than this woman who we had hurt very badly. My living amends, besides the indirect amends that I've made to her and to his daughters, are to live in my own marriage today, in a way that, would never, as God wills it, get near a situation like that ever again. So with that, I pass.
Thank you very much, Rachel O. Marilyn T., you're up next, followed by Wendy M.
Hi, this is, Hi, this is Marilyn T. from California. Grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. Kind of a different way of looking at it. I've just doing my eighth and ninth step with a Vision for You sponsor, and when I thought I was done, something else came up, and it came up that I had all this anger towards someone who had an affair with my husband, and you know, it was all her fault, and then I exploded and did some horrible things, and in truth, it really was the resentment for her was because she took my husband. The interesting thing was, in trying to dig through it, that, and speaking of the ex-husband, he actually had multiple affairs and infidelities, and he was big on keeping it all a secret, and he shamed me for my behavior of reacting to him. And then the interesting thing is, it goes back, and then it goes back into my father, who was a rager and physically abusive, and telling me to be silent and to be ashamed of my behavior and keeping secrets. It is so interesting what this program will do for you in uncovering and unearthing things that you have stored. I'm 64 in your life forever. These things happened back in my 20s with a young child. So grateful that I am able to do these resentments. I am able to figure out what my amends and my part is going to be, and I am able to move on and let something go that is over 40 years old. And I am so thankful to God and my sponsor for that. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marilyn T. And Wendy M., you're up next. And it looks like you do have a full 3 minutes because people went. Thank you so much.
Oh. Yeah, good morning. It's Wendy M. And I'm here on an incredible trail in Colorado, and I'm recovered, and God is amazing. And what I know about this is really nothing, right? So what I know is I was a fat, desperate girl who starved for attention and love, and I would do anything for it. So in my 20s, I would let strangers into the home late at night, people I didn't know. You get the idea, and I kept men emotional hostage, as, you know, what I could do, you know, I was just starving. And in terms of my marriage, something I heard this morning that was incredibly helpful was you can cheat, you know, you can be a cheater and actually like have an affair, but you can be an emotional cheater. And I would, right in front of my husband at parties 2-3 years ago, flirt, you know, stealing, taking. And the way I looked at relationships was just taking, truly, until someone, they said entire abstinence, and that's complete service, you know. And my marriage was take. I married him not because I was into him at all, but he would provide a child, I would get a ring on my finger, and someone was going to take care of me. It had zero to do with giving, zero to do with service and love, nothing. And today, when I'm afraid to be with somebody, whether it's emotional or sexual, or even like the other night, my aunt, I was terrified to be with her, right? So I'm writing, and God says to me, you know what? What if you just loved her fiercely? What if you just loved him, whoever him is, fiercely? And the minute I go to that piece of, I'm going to be of service to this person, all of my fear goes away, because it's not about what I'm getting. It's not about how I look. Do I look gorgeous enough? Do I smells terrific. Am I going to be the, you know, what can I get? The minute I'm in get, I'm in fear, I'm small, and there's zero God around, zero God. And the minute I'm into, I'm here on this earth to love fiercely, all goes well. Everything goes well. Even an ex-husband goes beautifully. It all goes well because I'm kind now. I have directions. I have an entire abstinence. It's not just about the food. It's about how I can give, how I can love, who I can love. If I'm not loving someone, it feels really scratchy and itchy inside. It does not feel good because I'm in self in that moment. And all I got to do is turn the compass over to God and say, what's up? And God said, you're here to love fiercely. You're not here to get. You're here to love fiercely and have a great time. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Wendy M., and thank you, everybody, for your amazing shares today. We'll now transition the meeting by reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will ask Kathy Jo P. to please read A Vision for You.
Hello, this is Kathy Jo P., recovered compulsive reader in Minneapolis. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.